Accession number 27083, Reel 57.
Sir Henry, just before we, in fact, start your period as First Sea Lord, I think that after this short break we've just had, or during this short break, you've remembered, I think, three or four things that you would like to touch on during your period as CNC Fleet before we do go on to your period as First Sea Lord.
Thank you. Yes, these are more or less timeless. No specific year is relevant. They're not frightfully important, but they're quite instructive. The first was that on one of the earlier occasions when I had to throw quite a high-level NATO lunch party, I became aware, and I'd been there several months by then, of course, I became aware that there was a tame grey squirrel which used to come and perch on the pantry windowsill. And of course the naval stewards immediately took to this creature and it became a pet. And I can't remember who it was, but it was someone like the chairman of the military committee who was coming to lunch on one occasion, on this occasion. And his car was held up just as he was approaching the sweep round by the front door of Admiralty House, because there was Arthur, creature's name was, and the previous day we'd had roast beef for lunch and with it Yorkshire pudding in those little sort of round things. And Arthur was adept at raising the lid of the dustpans outside the pantry, which was at the far end of the house, sufficiently to insert a paw and scoop out anything that was with potential that might be within reach. And he found a Yorkshire pudding. And there he was, dribbling like a football, one of these Yorkshire puddings straight down, immediately past the front door, which held up this great man arriving. He was great fun. I mentioned earlier in connection with with the Mullies when they came to lunch that we had fun with their dog afterwards. The garden at Admiralty House had been let go. My predecessor had rather let it go. And the tennis court, which lay right at the bottom, and it was on a quite a distinctive slope, the whole thing, and took the form of a series of terraces, really, of which the tennis court formed the bottom one. And there'd been a hiccup over some civil service arrangement concerning the gardener, who was only required part-time anyway. And one of the earlier things I had to do was to try and get a bit of order restored, because I never had, keen gardener that I am, I never had had time to do this. And it wasn't very satisfactory. We got it, after a long struggle, I got a part-time gardener. And after an even longer struggle, I got the tennis court brought to a serviceable state, at any rate, which was a great pity, because you don't let property like that go. And so on. On one occasion, I held a dinner party which was for a variety of people, but it included the French naval attaché in London, who was a very nice man, whose name I can't recall. He spoke fluent English, but his wife did not. She only spoke, she was learning English, she was doing her stuff, but she hadn't got very far down the line yet, and really she only spoke French. And the dining room in those days was at the extreme end of the house, It could hardly have been further away from the kitchen. And there were half a dozen steps between the different floor levels. So it was quite a performance for the unfortunate stewards to carry a formal meal, particularly if the thing under that was about to be served had to be brought to the minute, otherwise it was overcooked or whatever. And this was quite tricky. And on this occasion, we were going to have what I think the French call une omelette flambée for our pudding. And the evening had gone quite well. I wouldn't put it more strongly. It wasn't exactly a riot of fun. And certainly when we moved into the dining room, it was still less of a riot of fun, because I had to conduct, in my schoolboy patois French, I had to conduct a conversation with the French naval attaché's wife. And I briefed the stewards that when they arrived, that it was acceptable to have a minor delay before they served the omelette flambée, and that as it was being brought down the steps into the dining room, they would switch the lights out. And then you would see the flambée, hopefully. And I briefed the French naval attaché's wife to the best of my ability in my bad French, and told her that this was a traditional English custom, and that when the omelette arrived, it would be, hopefully, and my heart was slightly in my mouth, it would be flambé. And she had to be very careful, because there was a standard naval penalty for the person who contrived to let the flame die out. And that was to kiss the handsomest man or woman on his right or left. And she appeared to hoist all this in. And whether I'd really explained myself is another matter. And the moment came. And it all went more or less according to plan, except the lights did not go out. And the omelette came in, and it was flambé. And the French ambassador's wife took a deep breath and blew it out. At which point, the younger steward by the lights switched all the lights out. I won't finish this story off, because it doesn't really bear telling. There was another, also in light vein, a rather curious incident when Mountbatten, who by then was no longer on active service at all, but every year, unlike Devonport, where they had a Drake dinner because of West Country history, or really throughout the rest of the Navy, who had a Trafalgar dinner Navy-wide, at Northwood we had, and I don't know how this came about, but we had, neither of those two, we had a Jutland dinner. And of course, if you study your history, it's anybody's guess who really won the Battle of Jutland, because the British naval losses were significantly more worse than those of the Germans. On the other hand, we claimed that the German High Seas Fleet never put to sea again. In fact, they did, but they didn't get very far, and then they turned back. So it's a moot point as to who won the Battle of Jutland. And each year, it was the Battle of Jutland was celebrated, and it alternated as to who would be the principal guest, who would jack up the principal guest between the air commander, 18 group, and myself as CNC. And it was my turn. And I debated whether to ask the... He wasn't the head of the German Navy. In fact, he had retired. And I can't remember his name now. But he had been the fleet commander, more or less, at the time of the armistice. And he had been extraordinarily good and helpful in controlling local events in Germany after the peace had come into force, for which later on he was awarded, I think it was an OBE, and I have no doubt Richard deserved it. He was a workaholic. He'd parted from his wife. He spoke fluent English, and I thought, you know, quite a nice chance to get him in on this act. We'd become by way of being friends. And the alternative was Dickie Mountbatten, who was even then cutting back quite significantly on his program, because he was getting on a bit. And not least because of that, I decided to go for Mountbatten, because I thought that he might cut right back on his program in a year or two's time, whereas the German would probably still be around. Anyway, he accepted, and he came. And the arrangement was that he would arrive at Admiralty House at whatever it was, 5:30 or so, and almost at once would be taken down to the senior rates mess, a little bit further away, in the headquarters, and he would spend half an hour in the senior rates mess, over a glass of grog, meeting the senior rates, and then back to Admiralty House, where he asked for an hour and a half to bath and change and rest before the big dinner. Well, this went splendidly. He arrived on time, took him down the senior rates mess. He was greeted by the president of the mess. He walked straight to the far end of this longish room, and worked his way back, talking brilliantly either side as he came, and was back in the vicinity of the entrance with 2 minutes to go to his half hour. It was beautifully timed, very well practiced at this sort of thing. Took him back to Admiralty House, and there, outside the front door, was my flag lieutenant and his ex naval chief writer, who acted as his sort of flag lieutenant and PA, call it what you will. And there was a great heated argument going on, because apparently Mountbatten had been to a great thing, a ceremonial thing in the palace, a levee that morning, which had occasioned him to wear his lightning conductor and trousers and so forth. And there'd been a slip in the drill, and his lightning conductor trousers had not been got back to his London house, still less down to Northwood. And the time was then, whatever it was, 6:30, 7 o'clock. And no way, with the evening traffic, could you get a pair of trousers sent down by car, however it was arranged, in time for him to wear during the dinner. And they were having a great hustle over there. And I said, it's all right, so don't bother at all. I may not catch the lot, but these trousers were worn, of course, by captains and up. I said, I will have as many as I can contacted and tell them to put on ordinary mess undress trousers without the stripe, and I will wear that myself, so you can wear your ordinary trousers, and there won't be a problem. Fine, we decided accordingly. And about 10 minutes before we were due to leave to go down to the mess for the dinner, my valet came to me, who'd been with me since he was a boy steward, splendid man he was. He later went on to look after John Major at Chequers, and he's since pulled out of it altogether. And he said that Admiral Mountbatten had a problem and wanted to see me rather urgently. So I went along to the guest room in Admiralty House, and there was Dickie with his ordinary day trousers, and he favoured the sort that hang on your hips as opposed to coming well up and being hitched up with braces or anything like that. And there was a good 3 to 4 inch gap between the bottom of his white waistcoat and the top of his day trousers. "That's all right," so I said, "there's no problem. I'll go and get one of my cummerbunds and put that on you, and that'll cover the gap." And I did, only to find that my cummerbund went about barely two-thirds of the way around his much bigger frame. "All right," so I said, "I've got a second one, and they're both the same." And so we spent 10 minutes stitching together, to pinning together two cummerbunds, and so forth, and that worked. Well, it was it's quite a good evening. It was a successful evening, I think. It's always difficult to know what to say about Jutland, and I'd said it. And then he got up to speak, and I'd introduced him and all that stuff. And he made a not terribly good speech, but it was all right. And then, as we got up to leave the table, he spoilt it by turning to me and saying, "Would you like a copy of my speech?" And there's one thing I didn't want at all, was a copy of his not madly exciting speech. But I think I'd rarely said delighted or some such, because it was easier to do so. Well, he spent the night, and after breakfast next morning, he left. And after he'd gone, later that the following evening, I discovered from my valet that he had taken with him both my cummerbunds. And I thought, this is enough. I'm going to get both those back, or else. And I did. I won't tell you how. In more serious vein, it was while I was at Northwood that increasing attention was being paid to what became known as rules of engagement for not so much war at sea, but confrontation, which, if left unchecked, might eventually escalate into war, and so on. And this is a very complex subject. It had a heavy political slant to it, necessarily. You might have to impose, because the politicians imposed on you, a degree of restraint which you, as a professional tactical commander, wouldn't have dreamt of imposing ordinarily. But of course, the country is actually run by the politicians and not by a Cinque Fleet. And that's not going to change. And we had developed this in quite a big way, and I was at great pains, meticulously, to inject this sort of stuff into any exercise, whether national or NATO, that we did. NATO was way astern of, way behind the hunt on this one at all, altogether. And there was much to be learned. And it was a constantly changing scene as technology progressed, improved, and circumstances varied. Weaponry, in the main, became capable of longer ranges or less certainty of identification, and so forth. And I mention this because it came to the fore 4 years later in the Falklands War, and a number of then commanding officers had been on the staff at Northwood at this time and remembered what went on there. So that's a gap filler, as it were, for my time at Northwood. And now I'm off to back to Whitehall yet again to take over as First Sea Lord.
Before you do, I just have just one question arising out of what you have said. You said on your second little vignette there that the dinner you held at Northwood, where the French naval attaché and his non-English-speaking wife attended, was not a riot of fun. Can I take you back to your time when you were CNC Fleet and the dinner which you gave in the hangar of Ark Royal with the Queen, with her on your right-hand side? Was conversation easy with the Queen after various difficulties with martinis and all that sort of thing?
Oh, perfectly. It couldn't have been easier.
Even though she'd struggled with the trout and all this.
She'd had trouble with the trout. She couldn't have been more gracious or easy to talk to. And it was a real pleasure to do so. And although I think that was probably about the only occasion then that I had dealings with her, and it was, after all, her jubilee, I had more occasion later on when I became First Sea Lord. And she was always extremely easy and really a great delight to talk with and do business with.
On an occasion like that, where there is this large dinner, but you are seated next to her, and she only basically has two people to talk to during the evening, I assume. Does she ask you about naval matters? Is that the sort of... In other words, does she take that opportunity to ask you that sort of question?
I don't quite know how to answer that. I suppose the answer is she does if she wants to, but not if not. And I can't remember exactly what we talked about with her. I've already quoted an incident talking to Jim Callaghan, my yes. other side. And there wasn't that conversation during the fish course. I really don't remember. But it wasn't a strain. It was very easy.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. Well, we now approach your period as First Sea Lord. So that you can have Sir Henry a very clear run at this, I'm going to change the tape.
Right.
And we'll start from there.
Right.